Almost a decade ago, Abenaki scholar and paleoethnobotanist Fred Wiseman started working with Abenaki communities as part of the documentation process for federal tribal recognition. While he was in these communities, Wiseman noticed crops that had long been thought to have disappeared, growing on the hillsides. It led him to start the Seeds of Renewal project. He has painstakingly tracked down native seeds and worked to get those seeds preserved and back into agricultural production. But just as crucial as growing the crops is reinvigorating the connection to traditional cultural rituals that are tied to agriculture. Fred Wiseman spoke with VPR's Patty Daniels about how the project has been developing.
What kind of crops are we talking about? Are they mostly grains?
Well, it's a very large variety of different types of crops. Of course, the grains that are represented, the main, of course, is corn. Corn was domesticated in the New World. It's strictly a New World crop. And we now have four, maybe five this year, distinct varieties of corn. But we also have about 8 to maybe 10 varieties of beans, several squash. We also have sunflowers, which could be classified as a grain, as well as ground cherries, pumpkins, gourds, a lot of other things.
And these are all varieties that were thought to have long since disappeared. So when you first started seeing these plants growing on hillsides, how did you know that what you were seeing were these rare or endangered or thought to be extinct plants?
Well, the first one that I saw was Helianthus tuberosus, or the Jerusalem artichoke. There was a quarter-mile-long clone at the Wrongway Bridge in Cambridge that was growing. And I thought, wow, that's amazing. Somebody must have sown a lot of Jerusalem artichokes through there. Jerusalem artichokes aren't a very popular crop right now. So I figured that these might be an ancient clone. So what I did in 1995, I guess, was put a stake at the leading edge of the clone. And then I was able to record over the last few years that it had actually been spreading about more or less a foot a year, which takes us back to 400 to 600 years ago is when it got started.
Wow.
So that was the first one.
And so when you saw that plant growing, did you start to try to gather those seeds?
Yes. The Jerusalem artichokes are best propagated by tubers. They have tubers. They don't really set seed very well here in Vermont. The season is too short for them. But then I started talking with old-time Abenaki farmers, and it turns out there were a lot of other crops that people had just barely been holding on to here in Vermont and also in New Hampshire. And recently I've discovered quite a few over in Maine.
And so what does it take to actually get those seeds into production, to gather the wild seeds, but also to cultivate them to grow more crops and yield more seeds?
Well, the first step is to actually track down the rumor. Some of these seeds are of crops that have been rumored, like Algonquin squash. I learned that that was supposedly an Abenaki variety. Other people have heard of it. People grew it years ago, but nobody could give me a viable modern seed that was raised by indigenous people. So it took me a long time, I call it chasing seeds, to be able to locate sources. And I found one group of native seed savers in Manitoba, up in Canada, they kept it. And so I was able to get that variety from them, bring it back to the United States and start growing it.
Hmm. And do you feel that's the same kind of seed that would have grown here 400 years ago?
Well, a colleague of mine, Steve McComber, who is probably the foremost Haudenosaunee or Iroquois ethnobotanist, has studied this for years, basically to study what's Iroquois. But he also has to understand what isn't to be able to know what's his. And so he was the person that gave me a lead on that from stories, oral history, and some old other documents.
And is there the possibility of cross-pollination?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
And what kind of concern does that raise for you?
A huge concern. The big problem is that corn will cross-pollinate, and various squashes and pumpkins will also cross-pollinate. And so the Seeds of Renewal Project has been very careful in making sure that the people that are partners that grow it out only raise one specific type. There are two specific kind of species of pumpkins, let's say. Those can be raised next to each other because they don't cross-pollinate. But you can't have two, let's say, there's a a species called Cucurbita pepo. You can't have those within a mile of each other. And so what I've done is I've distributed these seeds out to various growers, and they have to make the choices to where they're going to plant them, how they're going to plant them. There's other techniques, like you can plant them at different times so they'll flower at different times. You can actually even close up the pollinated flowers of squash and things. There's a lot of other techniques, but basically you got to keep them separated.
And the reason for keeping them separated is
To prevent cross-pollination. Once you cross-pollinate these, it's very, very difficult to get the original germplasm back. And it's almost as if they've crossed over the threshold into extinction.
You were able to find a community that was really interested in pursuing this work. Is it pronounced Cohosic?
That's correct.
Tell us about the Cohosic community.
I worked for years with the different Abenaki bands on documenting their history. And one of the bands that recently achieved state recognition was the Cohosic Band. They're over in the Connecticut River Valley in the Haverhill, New Hampshire, Newberry, Vermont area. And I asked them about their crops, and they had received back from some old hill farmers in the area the original Cohosic corn. And that got them really excited and started thinking about their identity as woven into their crops and their agriculture. And, of course, I was able to go over and give lectures and talk about my work. They got excited. I gave them the seeds, and they started growing them. And so it's been a wonderful success.
And the seeds are spreading to other areas. You've worked with the Passamaquoddy in Maine?
That's correct. Yeah. Yep. I was able to get the seeds over to two Passamaquoddy reservations and also a colleague of mine, Barry Dana, in Solon, Maine. He's a Penobscot. We got the seeds to him, and he's been distributing them to Maliseets and Penobscots. So we have a lot of good connections, and the seeds are spreading out.
And so, you know, we wouldn't want to let listeners think that this is all seeds for the sake of seeds. There are real agricultural traditions and cultural traditions that are tied to these specific crops.
That's correct.
How have you seen those regrow as well?
Well, that's another part of the work that I did with the tribes was recording their ceremonies, the ways that they think about corn and things like that. And so what I've been doing for the last probably 3.5 to 4 years is working with especially the Coas, but other bands, and also with the Lake Champlain Maritime Museum, and creating programming that will teach the old dances, such as the green corn dance or the sun dance and the rain dance. So I've been able to find these in archival videos that have been taken. And so what I've been doing is taking the music, redoing the music. The Coas have a group of women singers that sing these songs, and I've been working with them on the choreography. And so I consider that the agriculture isn't just the seeds, it just isn't the agricultural systems. It includes the ceremony. It also includes the cuisine as well. And I just went to a international conference in Tucson, Arizona, just a little over a week and a half ago. That was a meeting of all the thinkers in indigenous food systems. And it was a real eye-opener for me. I'd been kind of lonely here in Vermont. But going out west, I've discovered that this is a process that's taking place from Alaska all the way to Tierra del Fuego. And we here in the far northeast have not been very interested in indigenous food systems, indigenous cuisine. But I was able to get a lot of support and a lot of inspiration from people that have been doing this for 30 years.
Tell us about what kind of inspiration.
The first thing is that we're not alone. Okay. Seeds of Renewal has been basically a more or less one-person operation. And it's been my responsibility to track down the seeds, to actually figure out the genetics of them, their distribution and things like that, and to actually see that other people have been facing exactly the same kind of dilemmas that I have, and they have developed their protocols and their techniques, their scientific techniques. It really showed me where my strengths have been in my work, as well as some weaknesses that I need to rethink. And, of course, the cross-pollination is a big one. And I've got some ideas from them about pollination cages and all kinds of interesting strategies. And so that's the first thing. And the second thing is the importance of indigenous food systems. Elsewhere in the New World, these are very, very, very important and receive huge amounts of public and governmental and organizational support. And there are organizations that specifically deal with what I've been dealing with. So when I've been working here basically in isolation, I didn't realize that there were other people that have been doing this, and there are options that that we can face in moving forward. But on the other side, I've realized how much there's a paucity of interest in indigenous cuisine, indigenous food systems in this area. And I think it's a fact that until recognition, Vermont and perhaps to a certain extent New Hampshire really never considered Native people as important, except as kind of as a historical anecdote. But to understand these crops, for example, these crops here are very climatically robust. In other words, the crops that we grow here are zone 4, and those will grow fine in Newfoundland to Georgia. And so in a time of climatic uncertainty, the germplasm that's represented by these crops has great potential for climate change, also for water quality issues, because the agricultural systems are very – they sequester phosphorus. They take it out of the lake in the form of fish fertilizer rather than contribute to it. So there's a whole bunch of potentials that we see in indigenous agriculture that – just working by myself, I really had thought of just in passing, but I never realized how important they could be.
So you've come back from this conference with, you know, an infused energy and inspiration.
Oh, yeah, I'm all fired up.
What's your vision for Seeds of Renewal, or the understanding and the awareness of indigenous food systems for the Northeast? What do you imagine this kind of impact could have?
Well, there's... basically, the first stage is education. So I want to thank you very much for giving me the time to be on the air. But I'm working, I have been working, and will continue to work with the Archaeological Heritage Center in Barrie. I'm going to, last year I gave several talks on this. I'm going to do it again this year. Seeds of Renewal is partnered with the Center for Integrative Herbalism in Montpelier. We're going to be teaching an actual class in indigenous food systems and food as medicine, which is another important theme. I'm working with with ECHO, with the Maritime Museum. So these partnerships, what we're doing is going to be ramping these up. For example, I have to take off in just a couple minutes for a meeting that I'm going to be talking with people from the Maritime Museum about a Seeds of Renewal exhibit in 2017. And we're going to have to start thinking about funding, design, and all of that. So things are a-popping.
Why is this work important to you?
Well, I was originally trained at the University of Arizona as a paleoethnobotanist. And when I came to Vermont after leaving MIT, I had to leave that type of training behind because the Abenaki communities here needed me as a scholar, as a historian, as an ethnologist to record their information, and as a political activist to seek justice, social justice for the Abenaki people, which from 1993 until we got recognition just in 2012. That's been the main focus of most of my research, most of my publications. But now that that's done and I've recently retired from Johnson State College, I've decided to go back to my roots. And this is what my training is in. This is an old passion of mine, and it's something that it's kind of making me young again.
Fred Wiseman is an Abenaki scholar and a paleoethnobotanist. He runs the Seeds of Renewal Project, and he was speaking with Vermont Edition executive producer Patty Daniels.